The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.
The Beasley Broadcast Group. This is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.
Opinions expressed during the following paid program are those of the program producers and do not reflect the views of WRCA Radio, its staff, or management.
Good evening, gang. It's Paul Burish, and it's time for Tube Talk.
Down at an English fair, one evening I was there, when I heard a showman shouting underneath the flare,
"I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. There they are standing in a row. Big ones, small ones, some as big as your head. Give them a twist, a flick of the wrist, that's what the showman said. I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. Every ball you throw will make me rich. There stands me wife, the idol of me life, singing roly bowl, a ball, a penny, a pitch.
Singing roly bowl, a ball, a penny, a pitch. Singing roly bowl, a ball, a penny, a pitch.
Roly bowl, a ball, roly bowl, a ball, singing roly bowl, a ball, a penny, a pitch. Now that I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts, every ball you throw will make me rich.
Have a banana.
There stands me wife, the idol of me life, singing roly-poly ball, a penny, a pitch. All together now.
Singing
harmony.
Sing your roller ball, a ball of many a fish.
Roller ball, a ball.
Roller ball, a ball.
Sing and roller ball, a ball, a penny a pitch. Sing and roller ball, a ball, a penny a pitch.
Oh my, yes indeed. Greetings, fellow radio enthusiasts. Let me assure you that this program has been designed, assembled, and bench-tested to deliver the maximum performance for a radio program on the standard broadcast band. You will experience the utmost in selectivity of fine music and sensitivity to the issues concerning the vintage radio community. So sit back and relax for the next hour or so, I guess. And that was Freddie Martin and his orchestra, believe it or not, Merv Griffin, doing his best English accent on the vocal. That's from 1949. And can you believe it? Merv Griffin. Well, you know, you don't have to believe me. You will get this music nowhere else on your radio dial. Well, maybe except here when they play Danny Stiles. And I don't know if this is working for you or not, so Maestro, save me, please. Please.
Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Going downtown, see a man, and I ain't got time. Shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Time and time waits for no man, and I ain't got time. Shake your hand. Standing on the corner, all full of jive. But you know that you're my boy, and I'll always give you five. Da-di-a-da. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Time and time waits for no man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Standing on the corner, all full of jive. But you know that you're my boy, and I'm forced to give you five. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand.
The Nat King Cole Trio from 1941, a 22-year-old Nat King Cole, one of the best jazz pianists on the planet, often noted for that beautiful, soothing, sort of caressing style of singing that he possessed. But in the early days, it was all about jazz and jumping and jiving, and that's Nat. Time for a little more jive here. This is a little Java jive. Time for some coffee. We've got more time to go on the show, and I think I need a cup right now. Yes, I do.
I love coffee. I love tea. I love the Java Jive, and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup,
boy.
I love Java, sweet and hot. Whoops, Mr. Moto, I'm a coffee pot. Shoot me the pot, now pour me a shot. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup. Oh, slip me a slug from the wonderful mug. I got a rug till I'm stuck in the jug. A slice of onion and a raw one. Draw one. Waiter, waiter, percolator. I love coffee. I love tea. I love the Java Jive, and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup. Ooh, Boston beans, soybeans, green beans, cabbage and greens. I'm not keen up on a bean unless it is the cheery, cheery bean, boy. I love coffee, I love tea, I love the Java Jive, and it loves me. Coffee and the tea and the Java and me. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, yeah. I love Java, sweet and hot. Whoops, Mr. Moto, I'm a coffee pot. Shoot me the pot, not pour me a shot. A cup, a cup, a cup,
yeah.
Oh, throw me that slug from the wonderful mug. I'll cut a rug till I'm snug in the jug. Drop a nickel in the pot, Joe. I take them a slow. Waiter, waiter, percolator. I love coffee, I love tea. I love the Java Jive, and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me.
Yeah.
A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup.
And yes, that's the Ink Spots here on Tube Talk. Interestingly enough, another Decca recording group. Nat King Cole Trio was a Decca group as well. And you know, it's interesting, you look around for commentary on music and things of the time, things that capture the spirit of the time. Well, this is actually a coffee commentary. I found this on a coffee website, oddly enough. And give you a little Java Jive background here. This is how the extreme coffee fanatic would view that song, I guess. Java Jive, a high-spirited ode to coffee in which the narrator enthusiastically professes his love for Java and tea too, but it's really about the coffee. And the love is mutual. I love coffee. I love tea. I love the Java Jive, and it loves me. And it's not just the coffee he loves. It's also that coffee jive, meaning foolish, playful talk in the jazz slang of the era, as well as a popular style of 1930s big band jazz. The song lyrics themselves are a great example of the jive. Lots of silly rhymes, including, oh, slip me a slug from the wonderful mug, I'll cut a rug till I'm snug in a jug, and everyone's favorite, including mine, I love Java sweet and hot. Whoops, Mr. Moto, I'm a coffee pot. And when the Ink Spots recorded that song in 1940, audiences knew that Mr. Moto was the Japanese detective played by Peter Lorre in 8 movies released from 1937 through 1939. And likewise, everyone was still cutting a rug, which was slang for dancing, popularized in the 20s, and still very current when Java Jive was released. Written by Ben Oakland, the music, and Milton Drake, the lyrics, Java Jive reached number 15 on Billboard's Hot 100. The Ink Spots performed it for years and have been there along with numerous other recordings by other artists, most notably the Manhattan Transfer's popular 1975 version. So even more, you know, we go by many, many, many years since its debut back in the 40s, Java Jive will still bring a smile to the lips of the coffee enthusiast. This will hopefully bring a smile to the lips of the Andrew Sisters enthusiasts, most notably Mr. Jimmy. Scrub me, mama.
In Harlem, there's a little place where everyone goes to see the way a washerwoman washes her clothes. If you like boogie-woogie rhythm, she's got a beat. Let the boogie-woogie washerwoman give you a treat. On every afternoon at one, the sessions begin, and all the boys from all the bands come down to sit in. They sit around and knock each other out when they play, while the boogie-woogie washerwoman washes all day. Rub-dee-ab-dub, that's just the way she rubs. Rub-dee-ab-dub, that's just the way she scrubs. Rub-dee-ab-dub, she wears out all her tubs. She rubs and rubs her knuckles right on down to the nubs. Rub-dee-ab-dub, that's how she kicks it off. Rub-dee-ab-dub, she keeps it nice and soft. Rub-dee-ab-dub, till someone hollers on, scrub me mama with a boogie beat. You really ought to visit there if you've never been. It doesn't cost a penny, just come down and walk in. If you like boogie-woogie rhythm, you'll get a treat. Let the boogie-woogie washerwoman give you the beat. Rub, 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 a rubbin' all day. She's a scrubbin' old boogie-woogie rhythm all day. Scrub, rub, a washing all day. Scrub me mama with a boogie beat. Me clean and let me dream till I'm out. That's the way she scrubs. Rub-dee-ab-dub. That's the way she rubs, 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 rubbing along, singing a boogie woogie song. That's how she kicks it off. She keeps it nice and soft. To summon all is all. Scrub me, mama, with a boogie beat. You really ought to visit there if you've never been. It doesn't cost a penny, just come down and walk in. If you like boogie-woogie rhythm, you will get a treat. Let the boogie washer woman give you a treat. Scrub me mama with a boogie beat.
Brent Manassa joins us tonight on Tube Talk. Brett hails from the great state of Texas. He is a radio collector, restoration man, and an educator through his nifty video series on all aspects of radio restoration. His day job is a psychotherapist at the Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, Texas. He is an adjunct professor who taught audio production courses at the University of North Texas. And Brett, welcome to Tube Talk. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for having me. That you make me sound a lot more impressive than I really am.
That's just absolutely fantabulous. You know, that's what we want you to leave here with, a good feeling. So we, you know, we'll give you the best intro we can. And, you know, one of the things we like to get started with usually when we have someone on is just to get a feel for how did they get interested in the world of antique radio. Everybody has a story of how they got interested or started in the electronics field. And how did you get hooked in antique radio, Brett?
Well, as I look back, I noticed that it kind of had there's the treasure hunting aspect of it. And when I was a little kid, even before I knew much about radio, I remember I used to love going through my grandfather's barns. My grandfather was a hoarder, is what you'd call it now, but he had
yes,
everything you could think of. And I would just love to go through and to see what I could find. And very often I would find radios and record players and just all kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing when you're a kid and you start pawing through that stuff and you wonder, first of all, what is it? How did it work? And, you know, you wonder how big a part of somebody's life was it and, you know, why did it wind up out here? But sometimes, too, it's great. I have a connection with my renewed interest in antique radio. I have an old Silvertone that belonged to a great uncle of mine, and and we found it in his house, and it was one of those things I just couldn't get rid of, and I hung on to it for years and years. And I used it quite a bit. And then I did finally get the thing restored, and I still have it. And it's kind of a nice family touch to it as well. So, you know, there's the electronic end of it all. And then sometimes if it's a family connection, they can become more than just electronics. They become little heirlooms as well. Now, I'd have to ask you, are there certain styles or brands that you enjoy collecting? Or is it just if a set hits your fancy or is unique in some way, is that what you look for?
At this point in my collecting career, I am kind of eclectic. My favorite decade is the 30s. I like the Art Deco style. I'm particularly fond of Zeniths and of Emerson Ingraham cabinet sets.
As many people are, they're very popular these days.
Yeah, well, they're beautifully made. It's really amazing.
And it's such a departure from, the very functional-looking electronics that are churned out today. So I think that's the other thing that's striking, especially about a lot of things from the 30s, is the eye for style as well as the eye for the electronics. And some of those Emerson made some nifty little sets, and despite a reputation as sort of a bargain set, I have one in particular that's a six-tube set, and it performs awfully well. So every now and then, you know, the engineers are right on target, too. So not only did they look good, some of them sound really good as well. Any other favorites? Do you like a Philco here and there?
Yeah, I'm a big Philco fan. I have a number of Cathedrals. I have one on my workbench that I want to get to at some point. I cannot remember if it's an 89 or what it is, but it's a big one. It's one of the big Cathedrals with kind of the scalloped edges across the top.
Very nice. Very nice. There's something about that wooden set and the glowing dial. I don't know what it is. I recently picked up, I was going to get it at a swap meet up here with the New England Club. I was going to buy it off the original seller. Well, another fellow in the club beat me to it, but I got it off the second guy, you know, so I managed to get it. And I have to say, it's a big old heavy set. It's 1591. It's about 1940, but it's got a tuning eye, and there's just something about it. I don't know what it is. It's a little bit of a monster, almost too big to put on a table, but I've become very fond of it. So we all have our favorites. And I just have to ask you, I mean, if people hear me introduce you tonight and they're familiar with the world of antique radio, many of them have probably seen either ads in Antique Radio Classified, or maybe were lucky enough to see you at Radio Fest do a presentation on antique radio restoration. They're probably familiar with the incredible set of video how-tos to restore radios from electronics all the way through the cabinets that you've done, Brett. And I have to ask you, what really led you to produce that whole educational video series?
Well, I remember thinking when I was first interested, because this kind of ties back into the first question you asked me, how did I get involved? I mean, part of it was just the thrill of the treasure hunt. I enjoy that. But for a long time, I was a radio announcer myself. And one time I was going through an antique shop and I saw an old radio that had already been restored. And I thought, wouldn't that look cool in my office? So I bought it. And of course, paid way too much for it. It was an exceptionally common set now that I know, and, you know.
Oh, well.
And I noticed that after a while, I stopped enjoying it so much, and I knew I needed another one. So I saw another one, and this was a little dirty. And I thought, well, I'll buy it, but it's already been restored, but the cabinet is just kind of dirty. So I bought it, and I wiped it down with some wood cleaner, and the thrill of watching that dungy old finish come back to life with just some wood cleaner wiping it down, I mean, really turned me on.
Yeah.
So then
I'm just kind of saying, because a lot of people have been down that road. Sure, go ahead.
Well, this is turning out to be a longer answer than you were expecting.
That's all right.
But the thing is, it just started gradually for me, like maybe it did for a lot of people. Then the next time I bought one that needed a new volume control, and that was pretty simple. I could figure out how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And just little by little, I got more and more upset, you know, more and more, you know, sets in bad condition. And I thought to myself, God, I wonder if there's a video out there that teaches people how to fix this. And unfortunately, there wasn't. So I learned by reading and by talking to club members and because I worked at a radio station, there were engineers all over the place.
Sure.
And I would try to sit with them and try to have them help me figure out stuff. But it was always difficult, and I thought, boy, wouldn't it be nice to have a video for this? And then I remember, then a little bit later, when I felt confident enough, I thought, well, why not you? So I made a video with what I wish I had.
I see.
When I was coming up.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because, you know, I joked a little bit about it when we were, you know, preparing for having you on. I said, you know, were you channeling Sprayberry or the ghosts of NRI, you know, National Radio Institute? And it's an interesting spin because, you know, if you read especially some of the old magazines, some of those old period magazines, the electronics magazines, you always see these ads for the RCA Radio Institute, and we can make you a radio repairman in, you know, three easy lessons, you know, send, you know, your 1995 in the coupon, and they'd send you a series of books and maybe some parts, and you could build, you know, your basic superhead. And, you know, obviously, I don't know how many people really got into electronics as a career, but it probably sparked a lot of people's interest in it. But there was sort of that self-help that existed in the early days, and you sort of took it to a different level. We're going to have video instruction. And obviously, antique electronic has become a hobby and more of a niche. It's not something that's was done for the masses to help them keep their radios playing. So I thought it was really kind of keen that you know, ran with the ball and took that sentiment that had always existed in radio about being your own repair person and put it onto video.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it a lot. I approach my repair videos. I'm not formally trained in electronics. And sometimes when electrical engineers watch my videos, that becomes pretty obvious to some of them. And but what I think, I'm a hobbyist and I'm a tinkerer and I'm curious. And I think that if I have any ability, it's the ability to take something that is really complicated and distill down what is it that the hobbyist needs to know? What is it that the tinkerer needs to understand about the circuit? Not necessarily can you do the math?
Right, I understand.
Figure out the computations and all of that.
So what we're really saying is a very practical approach to getting what's on your bench up and running again. Less so involved with the theory.
That's what I try to do, yeah.
Now, from what I understand, the first volumes of your series are really on the electronics end, and then there was a wood cabinet restoration video, and then a Bakelite restoration version as well. So it sounds like a whole complete program. Did you have a lot of help with this, or was it a one-man effort, you and your camera, and you were the voice and the hands and the film, and you did it all, or did you have somebody who gave you a lift with the programs?
I did have a lot of help from my friend Mike Camerata. And Mike is a videographer. He has a business here in Dallas where he films weddings and recitals and things like that. And he has the cameras and he has the know-how. He knew how to light the set. He knew how to do a lot of the technical production end of it. But everything else was me. I mean, I'm the one who did it. I'm the one who wrote it. I'm the one who ended up editing it. Because Mike, as talented as he is, didn't know enough about what the kind of video I wanted to make to actually edit it down.
Sure, right.
So it really is me and Mike Camerata who did it.
And you know, it's interesting, too, that you mentioned, you know, the lighting and the production work from a video angle. You know, anybody who's been in this hobby and has poked around, especially on YouTube, has seen sort of, you know, the good and the bad and the ones you can hardly see what they're doing. People have posted different, you know, tidbits or films of their restorations, and occasionally you'll get something that looks like a very interesting set, and the person seems to be very much in command of what he needs to do to get things rolling on it. But the lighting isn't good, and you can't see exactly what they're doing, and the audio gets muffled. Or conversely, you will find somebody who's more gifted from a production point of view, but sometimes seems to struggle, you know, or doesn't really have a handle on what needs to be done. So your set seems to be very much the complete program on this, and I'll say that because a very well-respected member of our club up here, Ray Bintliff, who we hope is feeling a little better, he had a little spell. He wound up in the hospital for a bit, but he's one of the old timers in our club up here. He's a fascinating guy. and a very nice man on top of it. He gave a review in, I believe it was Antique Radio Classified, on the wooden cabinet video that you had done, and he had some very nice things to say about it. And, you know, he was of the opinion that you seem to think that for a collector, and maybe especially so now where things, especially from the 30s, are getting harder to find, but, you know, those are what a lot of people are seeking, you can find a bargain if you find a set that's a little bit beat up cosmetically that might scare off a lot of other people. You say, well, you know, if I feel comfortable doing the veneer work and I feel comfortable getting the finish right, you know, I'll take a flyer on this, and for $20 I can get something that if it was in better shape, the guy might want, you know, $150 for it. So did you do that cabinet work video with that whole thing in mind, that something that's cosmetically a little unappealing could still be a good opportunity for the collector?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, all of us would like to have pristine original finishes and original veneers, but when that's not available, sometimes we can get some really nice sets. And we can do a lot of the work ourselves, particularly when that's the joy that you get. I mean, I enjoy listening to my old radios, but after a while, I get hungry for another project.
Yes.
That it's the projects that keep me going. And if the more skill that you have, the more technically that you're able to use the toned lacquers and re-veneering sets and things like that, the more fun and satisfaction you can get.
You know, I can really see this sort of progression, because what you're indicating here is what a lot of people go through in the hobby. You know, they collect basic sets at first, and they enjoy them, and they listen to them, and maybe they DX with them if it's a little better set that performs a little. But then they start to want to go to the next level, and whether that's the electronic work or to get something back to what it looked like, you know, approximate to when it came out of the box, they want to do more. They want to grow. And the ability, especially with the woodworking, because if you have a set that's electrically, you know, was fairly, you know, hasn't been touched too much or hasn't been hacked up by somebody who wanted to be an electrics repairman, but, you know, the cabinet work is something a lot of, I don't know what it is, some people seem to feel more comfortable with the woodworking, and maybe that's because there are more resources, there are more people who do amateur woodworking than do amateur electronics, but, you know, there's that urge to go to the next level, and that's what I kind of hear you talking about as you talk about your own progression. Is that a safe assumption to make?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's more, I learn more and more and more all the time, and that's what makes it so exciting. I almost like that I'm not formally trained, because if I were formally trained in electronics, maybe these simple early circuits wouldn't have the same magic to me. You know what I mean? Maybe they would. I don't know. I just know that there's part of me that almost, when I get a set working again that hasn't played in 60 or 70 years, it's almost like magic. It's almost like, wow, what? Look at this.
We are just going to hit the pause button here for a moment and remind the gang this is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio 1330. I'm Paul Burish. Our guest tonight is Brent Manassa. Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, too, because there is, I think, a little more magic involved when you may not be so technically knowledgeable that it all makes sense. You know,
right.
So you're a little bit more surprised. And it's probably a very similar feeling, a very similar spirit that somebody felt in the 30s who had never dealt with the wireless, you know, or the, and they're sitting there and all of a sudden they hear the news, or they hear Jack Benny or Fred Allen or Fibber McGee. And just a whole new world opened up on them. And they look in the back and they'd see the tubes and they kind of scratch their head and they might understand a tube could burn out like a light bulb, but they didn't really know exactly why, but they were, you know, darn glad that they had it and kind of wondered how did I do without this thing for so long? But I see what you're saying from someone who's not trained as an engineer. And it's an interesting perspective, too. And in the hobby, you see people who come at it from all angles. There are people who were engineers. I know people who actually worked for some of the great radio companies or worked in the service on electronics, and then people like yourself who are self-taught, and in the radio restoration is more of a multi-level experience than that just the electronics experience. And it really adds to the hobby, though, too, because you talk to them and you start to get a feeling everybody has a different perspective. And, you know, it makes the hobby quite fascinating to me to see people from different backgrounds with drawn into the hobby with different perspectives. And it's always great to hear their stories. How did you get started? Tell us about your favorite set that you found. And, you know, I'm sure this whole thing was a labor of love, because there's probably a lot of time and a lot of effort that went into these. I can only imagine how many hours and outtakes went on behind the scenes in the production of these. But was there anything in particular that you really enjoyed about doing these videos, these instructional videos?
I enjoyed the excuse to play with my old radios.
That's a very honest answer. I like that.
It is, because I can say to my wife, well, no, I'm not just wasting time, honey. I'm making my DVDs. And so, you know what I mean? It's like it gave
Right, exactly. As much like, I can say the same thing about doing this radio program.
Right.
Because other people like it. I hope they like it. So it must have some reason to do it. So, and I understand, you know, it's been a great service to the hobby, and a lot of people have learned a great deal about it. Now, from what I understand, and I wasn't aware of this, because the fellow who suggested I have you on the show is the webmaster for Tube Talk, and he's out in the Illinois Club. And Jim had seen you apparently at Radio Fest, and you had given a presentation. And do you do a lot of those things? Do you visit other clubs or shows? Do you do some public work as well? Or is it pretty much a video program that you put out?
I do as many as I can. I also tend to wait to be invited, though. I don't really market myself.
I see.
Maybe if I did, I would. But I've been to Archie twice, in 2009 and then again in 2011. And I presented at our local Dallas club, the VRPS.
Yep, with our friend Jim Sargent down there, yep.
Absolutely. Jim's a wonderful guy and a great auctioneer.
Oh, he's super. And, you know, I felt like such a fool because we had him on once, and he was still working for AT&T at the time, so he's a little more pressed for time, and now I understand he's devoting more of his time to his auction business. But we had him on, and we had a great chat, and we talked about everything under the sun. But, you know, I didn't get him to give me some of that auctioneer patter. Obviously I'm an amateur, you know, because how can I let him get off? So we'll have him back on, you know, to do that. So, but, you know, you mentioned Archie, and I'm going to have Olin Schuler on, I think, sometime coming up soon. We'll talk a little bit about this year's Radio Fest. That's just a great experience. Did you stick around for the whole event, or were you only able to be there for the day that you did your program?
No, I drove up from Dallas, and I used my presentation there as an excuse to go. Again, I'm always trying to justify to my wife being away for 3 days and spending thousands of dollars. And I say, no, honey, it's because I'm talking. That's why. I'm not just having fun. But, of course, I go there, and I have fun, and I buy way too many radios. And so, yes, that was a wonderful event. And the Atlanta Club... Is it SARS that's in Atlanta?
Yes, Southeast Antique Radio Society, I believe.
Yeah, I went there and gave a presentation there, I want to say in 2006. And I've been, of course, to the Mid-Atlantic Antique Radio Festival and the Michigan Club. I try to get around, but unfortunately I can't just...
No, I understand. Until the retirement, until the retirement bell rings, you're much in the same boat as all of us. We try to squeeze these things in, but you know it's great that you can get out and do some of this educational work. And the reason being that you know we have these talks up here at the New England Club. We have some very gifted people, and one fellow in particular who's been on the show who really knows his stuff. And he wants to make this more of a feature at our own swap meets and events, where he can give a little class or have someone else in the club give a little class, because it helps remove some of the maybe the fear and the mystery. You know, you get people who come to these shows and they're not quite ready to take the step and do it themselves. But if they can see something that's done and that's broken down into its basic steps, and it makes them feel like that might be something they can accomplish, and certainly in your case, if you could also mention that, by the way, you know, there is this video resource available to you to help you with this. Hopefully it'll help bring in some new people and some younger people into the hobby, as we are a graying hobby. Now, if somebody wanted to get their hands on some of your productions, how could they go about doing that, Brett?
They can email me directly. I'll give you the best price if you just email me directly at brettsoldradios@att.net.
All right. Well, that's a key piece of information then for a takeaway from this show tonight.
Yep. Brett's Old Radios, B-R-E-T-S, Old Radios. No punctuation, no periods, no spaces, no nothing. Brett's Old Radios at att.net. Of course, I'm also on eBay. That's where I do the majority of my selling. I just post it on eBay, and I get most of my orders that way.
Now, I have a question for you here, and, you know, feel free. You know, you're among friends. You can confess. You don't have to, you know, make up a number here. About how many sets would you have, or do you have even a ballpark figure? Because I know with some people, I ask them how many, and I can see it looks like the little calculator rolling behind their eyes. They've just lost count, and they stopped counting because when they tell people, especially if it's somebody else they live with, they say, you know, it's just too many. But do you have a current count, head count, for how many sets are in your possession?
How many radios, you mean?
Yes, how many radios?
Yeah, I think I've got about 250.
Right, right. Now, have you, at various points in time, culled the herd, so to speak, as far as you move along from one style to another, or try to make room for something that's struck your fancy and you want to go in that direction?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Some of the early sets that I got that I found out later were not especially collectible, I ended up letting those go. Just recently, I've kind of had to sell about 8 or 10 of my radios. I didn't want to, but my tax bill was a little bigger than I thought, so
well.
I had to put 8 or 10 sets up that I didn't want to sell. But yeah, it's a living thing. A collection is always a living thing.
And it's a dynamic thing too, and you know, the problem is, you know, for me, somebody who is, I'm on the small end of the equation here as far as sizes of collections, but one of the things that I always see, and you know, it's maddening, I mean, because we just, especially up here in the Northeast, I mean, real estate is very expensive, apartments are extremely, space is at a premium up here, so what, of course, do we see everywhere and are some of the prettiest sets you can find? You know, fully restored console sets, especially from some of the older collectors who are downsizing or moving to assisted living or a senior condo type setting. These things are absolutely everywhere and you have nowhere to put them. So do you have a mix of table and consoles? Do you favor table sets over consoles?
I have more table sets than consoles. I've got maybe a dozen consoles.
I see.
And here in Texas, we do have a lot of elbow room. We're not as tightened up as you are on the East Coast. But the trouble is my elbow room is ruled by my wife. And mm-hmm. she makes sure that the radios stay in their assigned spaces in my radio room.
Oh, it sounds like a tough life down there.
If they start to escape out into the living room, they end up back in the radio room.
Sounds like there's a leash law at the Manassa house. That's what it sounds
like.
Well,
I've learned that I'm happier when I don't disturb them.
I hear you. I hear you. I understand. You know, and it's funny what you say, too, because I have some relatives in the Texas area. They're all over Texas, and occasionally they've come up and visited, and we've taken them around and showed them, you know, real estate prices, house prices, and, you know, the size of these homes, look at the yards. And, of course, it just confirms what they've thought for a long time, that we're all absolutely nuts up here, which, you know, surprise, surprise. And they say, I can't believe you'd pay that for that. You know, and I say, well, you know, it's, you know, meanwhile, I listen to the stories of all the space they have, and I just kind of say, well, wistfully, someday maybe I'll have some room, you know, to store my sets. But, you know, one other question I would ask for you, what's it like? Do you find things in Texas? I mean, I know Watterson is sort of a local brand down there. Do you tend to find more things hunting around in either yard sales or antique shows or swap meets? Do you tend to find certain brands down there, or is it just a good cross-section of what people would find in any part of the country?
I tend to think that this is not the best place to find radios. I don't look very often anymore because I just never find them. You can't just go to a yard sale. You can't just go to a random antique shop and find anything that you really want to have. Either it's super, super common, or it's unbelievably expensive, or both.
Hmm.
The trouble is, I think that the best parts of the country to find old radios are where the population was in the 30s and
20s. Right, right.
And most of the population in the 30s and 20s was in the upper Midwest and the Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Yep, especially that Chicago area. Look at all the manufacturers up there, too.
Unbelievable. So that's where most of the stuff is found. Down here in the South, the population wasn't anywhere near what it is now back then.
Yeah, I've heard that comment from other people, and that's sort of an interesting aside on the whole hobby. And, of course, with the advent of the Internet, thank goodness, and, well, with a friend like Jim Sargent, there's never a shortage of radios, because I know he does well with estates and all. But he also turns up a lot of very interesting other collectible stuff, because I occasionally will get emails from him. In addition to the radios, he does have some other things. And, again, it's some of the things that fall into the advertising category, you know, advertising artifacts, you know, that are regional. Some very unique and different things. And so I certainly think you're right on that depending on where people were. And then the other thing, too, is depending on, you know, where things wind up, because I have terrible luck, I'll confess. You know, I really struggle. Yard sales, antique shops. I have a friend in the club. He calls me up. His wife found two radios at a yard sale. Okay, Ross, what did you find? Well, one's a little RCA Bakelite 5-tube. The other one is a DeWalt Catalin. How much did you pay, Ross? $10 for both.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
oh,
you know, and it just doesn't happen to me. I find old clothes and old suspenders with holes in them. That's what I find at yards. So, you know, I think it's much like when you're a teenager. You know, everybody has a friend who seems to do well with the girls. They're magnets. So you got to find one of those people, you know, that you can hang around with and hope to scrape off some of the excess. Because it certainly doesn't happen to me. I agree with you. I've almost stopped looking, other than at swap meets where I know there'll be plenty to pick from, because I just never find anything. Now, you know, one big question we have here of guests on the show, and especially with somebody who's been at it for a while and has a pretty good collection like you, if we were going to ship you out to a desert island somewhere, what set in your collection would Brett absolutely have to have with him? What couldn't you live without? That's the toughie of the day. Well, that's the quiz.
And that was the hardest one to answer.
it always is.
I would say I have a 12-tube Zenith console. It's not super, super rare, but it's not really common either. It's kind of right in the middle. I can't remember the model number off the top of my head. But that one I would want to keep, because it's a gorgeous cabinet, black dial, shutter dial, multiple bands, 12 tubes. That I think I could actually listen to for the rest of my life.
And it just sounds like it has it all, is what it sounds like. So, and again, for anybody who's interested in getting some information on acquiring some of Brett's nifty and very helpful instructional videos, that's Brett's Old Radios at att.net, or you can check out, I'm sure you could Google up your eBay site, and somebody could check them out on eBay as well. Brett, thanks for calling in from Texas. We appreciate your time tonight. It's great to talk to people all over the country, because sometimes we feel, you know, we're just up in our own little corner of the world, and who else collects and restores these old radios? Well, not only is it a national hobby, it's all over the world. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Have a great night, and thanks for sharing your story on how you got in radio and what radio means to you tonight.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate what you do.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air. Locked up the barnyard with the greatest of care. Down in the hen house, something stirred. When he shouted, "Who's there?" This is what he heard. "There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So calm yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us.
We chickens trying to sleep, and you butt in and hobble, 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 hobble with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around, shaking the ground. You're kicking up an awful dust. We chickens trying to sleep, and you butt in and hobble, 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 hobble. It's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay. We got ground to dig and worms to scratch. It takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. Oh, there ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. Kindly point that gun the other way and hobble, hobble, hobble off and hit the hay. Busy day, we got things to do, we got eggs to lay, we got ground to dig and worms to scratch. It takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. And kindly point that gun the other way and hobble, hobble, hobble off and hit the hay. Hey, hey, boss man, what do you say? It's easy pickings, ain't nobody here but us chickens.
Ain't nobody here but us chickens. That's Louis Jourdan and the Timpani Five. Thanks, Brett Manassa, for coming on and telling us about your wonderful series of instructional videos for all aspects of antique radio restoration. It was a pleasure to chat with someone hailing from Texas. It's a national hobby. It's an international hobby, folks. Don't feel you're alone with your collections. We've all been there before. We're here to help. And, you know, as we cruise past Memorial Day here and the anniversary of D-Day coming up, let's not forget those veterans who fought for our freedom and those Johnnies and Janes who are still in uniform serving our country. If you know someone who's a vet or see them out and about or see a current service person, snap off a crisp salute and say thank you. And with that in mind, here's a little veteran kind of themed music.
I left my heart at the stage door canteen.
This cute story of Army Life Romance by Don Cornell.
I left my heart at the stage door canteen. I left it there with a girl named Eileen. I kept her serving
all she had were gone. I sat there dunking donuts till she caught on. I must go back to the Army routine. And every doughboy knows what that will mean. A soldier boy without a heart has two strikes on him from the start. And my heart's at the stage door canteen.
My Heart at the Stage Door Canteen, written by Irving Berlin. That's Sammy Kaye and his orchestra, Dawn Cornell on the vocal. And we're going to stick with that salute to service man and woman theme here a little bit. I have another one of my favorites that, you know, if you're going to listen to this show, you have to listen to some of my favorites. I know you may have heard it before. This one features Marion Hutton, and we're going to give you a little background here on Marion Hutton before we hit the song. This is from her obit. Marion Hutton died at age 67, vocalist with Glenn Miller Orchestra. Marion Hutton, a vocalist with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, who for the last 20 years worked to help rehabilitate female alcoholics, died of cancer Saturday at her home in Kirkland, Washington. She was 67 years old. Ms. Hutton sang along with Miller from 1939 until the band leader joined the United States Army Air Corps in World War II. Songs she was identified with included Kalamazoo, Chattanooga Choo Choo, Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree, Moonlight Serenade, and I'll Be Seeing You. She acted in such movies including Love Happy with the Marx Brothers, In Society with the comedy team of Abbott and Costello, and others with Perry Como, Bob Hope, and Jack Carson. In 1965, she sought treatment for alcoholism and addiction to certain prescription drugs. Thereafter, she devoted her energies to helping alcoholics and establishing treatment programs in California prisons. In 1981, she founded Residence, a treatment center for female alcoholics in Kirkland, and was its executive director. Ms. Hutton is survived by her husband, Victor Schoen, three sons, her sister, Betty Hutton, who also was big in movies in the days. And what a truly remarkable life to have such a big musical impact, and then, you know, certainly to be able to be in that field of rehabilitation. What a gift she gave us with both her life working towards rehabilitating folks who needed help, as well as helping us out with our musical needs as well. So here we go. Glenn Miller, Tex Beneke, Marion Hutton, and the Maudenaires. I need a rest.
Cheer, and the boys will shout, the gals dress up and they'll all turn out. comes marching home.
Get ready for the Jubilee.
Hooray, hooray.
He'll get three cheers from you and me.
Hooray, hooray.
Uncle Sam will prove he's still the champ. He'll close up shop and break up camp.
And we'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching
Well, how can you get tired of that, gang? Thanks for tuning in this week. If you'd like to email the show, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. tubetalk1@gmail.com. If you'd like to check us out, it's tubetalkclassicradioshow.org. Thanks again for listening, Tube Nick Nation. Tell your friends, tell all your friends in the collector and antique radio community about Tube Talk. We'd love to have them listen in. Nighty night now. See you next time on Tube Talk.
This is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.